I'm pulling on my driveway. We all know what that means. It's time for another drive to work. Okay, so today I'm recapping a trip I took with my daughter to BroadwayCon. I've done a bunch of BroadwayCon podcasts before. I think the very first one we went to was in 2019, which was the fourth ever BroadwayCon. And then we went in 2020, and then there was a pandemic, and then the last couple years, it has been the same weekend as San Diego Comic-Con, so I haven't been able to go. But this year, they went back to January or February, and I was able to attend with my daughter, Rachel. So for those that don't know, BroadwayCon is a convention dedicated to the fans of Broadway. I am a longtime Broadway fan. And so it is really interesting to me to go to a convention of, like, I obviously do a lot of magic conventions and game conventions and such, but it's kind of fun. The reason I do podcasts on this is I like to sort of get insight from watching somebody else do something that we do, but on a different topic. And so I'm going to recap BroadwayCon 2025, talk about all the different panels and stuff Rachel and I saw, and I will apply them to magic. So that is what I've done the best. Like I said, this is my personally fourth BroadwayCon, and every BroadwayCon I've been to, I've made a podcast. This is my fourth BroadwayCon podcast. Okay, so let's start. So this is the 10th. I believe the first one ever was in 2016. Andrew Rapp, who was in Rent, he and one or two other people decided it'd be cool to have a convention about Broadway. And so they started one. The very first one had a lot of issues with it. There was a giant blizzard in the middle of it. And now they have a tradition every year where they call people up because a lot of people couldn't make it to the convention because of the blizzard. And so they were calling people up during it, and it became a tradition. Which is kind of interesting, by the way. I love how bugs can become features, if you will. But anyway, okay, so the interesting thing about this one is my Rachel and I had planned to go once we found out it was in February. And then we found out a week and a half before the event that the venue had moved. That it was still in New York. It's in New York City. It was still in New York City, but it had moved from slightly away from Times Square to Times Square. It was at the Marriott Marquis, which is in the heart of Times Square. And so it was... I've talked about this before for those that have listened to me do other podcasts on BroadwayCon. It is a smaller convention. I'm used to, like, San Diego Comic-Con, stuff like that, or giant conventions. This is... And in a lot of ways, it's very quaint. I like it. I like the fact that it's this very small-knit community and that it's not... You know, it's not quite the chaos of a lot of other conventions I go to because it's smaller. And I like that. It's a little more personal. So it's 3 days. It was February 7th, 8th, and 9th, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And so let me walk through what we did. So first, our first panel was on theater meme culture. It had a couple that does... That carries a... I didn't write down the name of the thing. They do a website that does memes every day. It's all about Broadway. And they had someone with them who was someone who did parody of Lin-Manuel Miranda. So Noah Simao, Will Anderson, and Rachel Joyce were the three speakers. And really what they were talking about was how the language of communication has changed. And that... One of the things is this current generation, Generation Z and Generation Alpha, I guess, which is the youngest one, has grown up in a world where they speak in visual language, and that memes have become a very common way to express things. And so what they were talking about was that part of entertaining and adapting and talking, especially to younger people, about Broadway is embracing the idea that, you know, there are new forms. And obviously, they do, you know, memes aren't inherently humor. I mean, they don't have to be humor. Most of them are humor. Mostly because you're making commentary about stuff. And there's a lot of meme structures. Anyway, it was very interesting hearing them talk about creating. Like, I create. I make this podcast. I write articles. You know, I do my blog. I mean, I create a lot of content. And so it's really interesting hearing somebody else talking about their content. For example, one of the things they talked about is sometimes you spend a lot of time and energy on something that you really like and then just falls flat with the audience. So like, eh. And other times you do something that you just don't think is a big deal at all and it becomes super popular. Now, the one thing that's interesting for me, like with this podcast, is I am pretty good about sort of tracking and figuring out when I do something that people like. Because I speak with, you know, the audience a lot, and I, you know, people can write into me and communicate when they like something or when they don't like something. Interestingly, in magic, when I do sets, I get a lot of commentary what they don't like. But for some reason, a lot of my communication stuff, my writing, my blog, I get a lot more I liked that rather than I didn't like that. And so a lot of the commentary I tend to get is more, ooh, that was fun, do more of that. Like, for example, recently I tried this new thing where I recorded a podcast right when I handed off a set. And then I held on to it for 2.5 years, and then I played it when Aetherdrift came out, because it was about Aetherdrift. And that went really well. People really liked that. Luckily, I've done more, so that worked out. But, so it's really interesting to see what people like. And I try to replicate the stuff that I see the audience likes. And if I get negative stuff, there's a lot of lessons. And listening to somebody else whose job it is to be a content provider, it is very informative and fun. And the other thing I realized is I tend to be very long form in my communication. I write 3,000 word articles. I record 30-minute podcasts. I do want to figure out how to do more conveying of things in shorter, bite-sizable forms. I mean, I understand my podcast is 30 minutes instead of 2 hours, which is a little more bite-sizable for a podcast. But I really want to figure out how to make communication, how do I take content and make it more bite-sizable and more something people can appreciate in a few seconds rather than having to dedicate minutes or, you know, an hour or something that you can do that. How do I do that? So that's something I'm very interested in. Okay, the second panel we went to was called Broadway's First Look. And the idea here is they talk to Broadway shows and they say to them, hey, we have an audience full of Broadway fans. If you would like to come and, you know, sort of advertise your show, and by advertising your show is send one or two, you know, one or more of your performers and have them sing a song. And so a bunch of different, some of them are upcoming. So I guess there's First Look, which is things that aren't out yet or just came out. And then there's some stuff for shows that are already out, just sort of reminding you they're out. Most of these were done by the actual cast. The very first one, there's a new show called Redwood, starring Idina Menzel. Idina Menzel was not there. Somebody else, one of the actresses from Six, sang the song. But they sang a song from it. Kaya Wilcox sang the song from Redwood, which is a brand new show. Real Women Have Curves, which was a movie starring America Ferrera, like her first big movie. They are making a musical. One of the big trends for those that don't know musicals is musicals more and more have been relying on adapting existing material, taking movies and TV shows and stories the audience already knows and bringing them to Broadway. There are some original, but a lot of them are sourced from other places. So anyway, they've taken the movie. It's an all-Latina cast. The movie was all-Latina cast, but mostly women. And anyway, they had the lead star, the part that America Ferrera played. She came and did a solo. And then all five of the main women actresses came and sang a group song, singing Real Women of Curves, I guess, the theme song of the main song of the show. Then there was two people from Music City, which is what is known as a jukebox musical. A jukebox musical means that they're not original songs, that you're singing known songs. Mamma Mia, for example, might be one of the most famous of the jukebox musicals. That's just songs from ABBA. There's a bunch of different ways you get jukebox musicals. Sometimes it's about the performers, Jersey Boys, for example. Sometimes it is thematic. It's like Mamma Mia, it's all the same singer. Sometimes it's the same songwriter, and Juliet, it's all the same songwriter. But anyway, Music City is doing a country jukebox musical. So it's a jukebox musical, but all the songs are country. They sang a song, played guitar and sang a song. And then two members of the Wonderful World cast, that is a biopic about Louis Armstrong. They sang When You're Smiling, which is a big Louis Armstrong song. Then the cast of Six, also, for those that know Six, it's about the six wives of Henry VIII. It's done kind of like a rock concert, sort of, and each of the women sings a song, and then there's three songs all of them sing together, so there's nine songs total. Anyway, I had a chance to see, I haven't seen it on Broadway, but I saw it, I saw it on a cruise ship. But anyways, it's super fun, and they sang two songs. Then there was a musical from the movie Saw. Yes, the movie Saw. They sang two songs, including one with the puppet. And it's more tongue-in-cheek. I mean, it is Saw, so it's Saw. But you could tell from the songs that they were very... It was a much more of a comedy musical, which I guess... I mean, there's horror elements. Then someone came from Titanic, which is a musical... how to describe Titanic? It is about... It takes place, I think, at a Titanic museum, and Celine Dion shows up and starts doing a tour, I think. And anyway, they sing the song Tell Him. And then Anne Juliet. That Anne Juliet is a musical that... what happened if Juliet didn't stay with Romeo and didn't die and sort of lived her own life? And it's called Anne Juliet. It's also a jukebox musical. All the songs in it were written by the same writer. There are a lot of famous songs performed by a lot of different people, but the common bond is the same writer. So anyway, that was just fun. It just, one of the neat things about something like Broadway, especially musicals, is it really is easy to sample them by showing off songs and just getting people come and singing. It was super fun. Next, we went to a podcast. So my daughter Rachel had seen this. I haven't seen it. There's a bunch of parody musicals in Hollywood. There's one for The Office, there's one for Friends, and there's one for Seinfeld. And the idea is they kind of condense all the seasons down into like one musical. They reference a lot of the plots, there's a lot of in-jokes, all the main characters are there. So this was, they had the cast of The Office, and they were just sort of walking through what it's like to like run the show. I think the entire cast was there. Both the stage managers were there. And they were just sharing stories, and there's a lot of fun things. They talked a little bit about how the swings work. So for those that don't know, in musicals, there are people who aren't necessarily on stage every day, but they are prepared. So when someone isn't there, they go on in their place. Technically, an understudy is somebody who's in the show, but they fill in for somebody else's part, while swing isn't normally in the show. But anyway, so that was a lot of fun. It was just neat seeing behind the scenes and talking to people. And one of the things that I really enjoy, and I enjoy it as a fan, so it's really fun to go and see, to hear the behind-the-scenes stories from people talking about how they make it. And really... reminds me of like, hey, there's something so compelling about behind the scenes content. Obviously, that's my core content, but it's always cool to remind myself when I get to somewhere where I'm the fan, not the content maker, but the fan, of how really much fun it is to see people from behind the scenes and hear the stories and just take something that you know really well and just learn about, oh, how did that thing get made, or what are the kind of things you might not even know about. Like one of the theme lines in the panels I saw was them telling stories about the chaos behind the scenes. But the reality is, if they do their job correctly, you, the audience, have no idea any of that is happening. Next, we went to a panel on immersive theater called A Story About You, immersive theater and bringing the audience into the heart of the story. So the idea of immersive theater, for those who don't know, is when it's not just you are in the audience and they are up on stage and you are sort of passive observers. The idea of immersive theater is that they come, like, maybe you walk around in space and you interact with actors who are there. Or, like, my family went to a murder mystery where, you know, we're having dinner, but the different actors are coming and talking to you, and, you know, there's a lot. You, the audience, are, you know, you had to solve the mystery. Like, the idea of immersive theater is you, the audience, aren't playing a passive role. You're playing a very active role. And the neat thing about this panel, I've been to panels before in immersive theater, at BroadwayCon, actually. But this one spent a lot of time talking about a lot of the technique. Like, okay, you're going to have a theater in which the people are interacting with the audience. And that means things will happen that you don't expect. How do you deal with that? You know, how do you deal with the idea that, you know, wild things... You know, when you have a play and you're up on stage, that's all planned. You know what's going to happen. Yeah, things, you know, wild things can happen, like I said. You know, mistakes can happen or whatever. But pretty much you know what's going on. It's pretty set. When you involve other people who are not normally part of the show, and you bring them in to make them part of the show, things are going to happen. You know, and that's one of the really cool parts about immersive theater. But they were spending a lot of time talking about, okay, how do you handle that? And so it's really interesting. It would really, like, for example, they spent a lot of time talking about safety, talking about how you handle people, you know, how you approach them. They really walked us through how you make sure that people are okay with you, how to make sure that you and your fellow actors are safe. And it was really technical, but it was really interesting. And then drummed home to me another sort of thing is there's a lot of behind-the-scenes technical stuff that I, once upon a time, I thought was kind of dry, you know, like, well... But the more I shared that technical stuff with people, the more people really liked it. Like, I remember I did my very first Nuts and Bolts columns was on card codes. Just trying to explain, here's how we order our file. Literally, here's codes we use. So if you see UA25, what does that mean? Oh, that's an uncommon artifact, the 25th one, you know. Like, and the more I sort of dug in and really talked about the nitty-gritty, I mean, it's not for everybody, but there's an audience that really gets into that, and that I started doing a whole series of Nuts and Bolts columns to say, okay, you want to make a magic set? Let's dive in deep. Let's talk about set skeletons, and let's talk about creature percentages, and ratios, and Azfan, and, like, really technical stuff that, like, you don't really need to know to enjoy magic. You don't have to understand the concept of Azfan to enjoy magic, but you need to understand the concept of Azfan to make magic, or to appreciate how we make magic. And so it really sort of hammered home the idea that, like, there is really an audience for the really crunchy technical part, and I need to provide that. Okay, then we had game night. So game night is they got a bunch of Broadway celebrities, and I think a few members of the audience were there too. And so what they did for game night was they played four games. First was Name That Tune. The hilarious part of that was Anthony Rapp, like I said, one of the founders of BroadwayCon, was one of the participants in game night, and his fellow teammate, they were playing Name That Tune, and it was a song I think that Anthony sang in Rent, and his partner could not get it, and Anthony was like dying, like, how do you not know this? So they played Name That Tune. When they play show tunes, you got to name them. They did charades where they gave them the names of plays. And the funny thing about that is how fast they got. I think they did most of them in under 5 seconds, which was interesting. They played a game called What's in the Box, where the idea is you show somebody something in the box, and they have to say to the other team what's in the box, but they're allowed to lie. And then the other team has to guess whether or not they're telling the truth or lying, and they get a point if they correctly guess whether they're lying or telling the truth. Turns out, nobody ever lied the entire time. There were weird things in the box, but nobody ever lied. Which was interesting. And then the last one, they played a game where they gave terms, and you would identify whether it was a sport term, a football term, or a dancing term. And the funny thing was, the biggest problem with it as a game was the actors were pretty familiar with dancing terms. So it's sort of like, oh, I know that, that's a dancing term, or I don't know that, must be a football term. So anyway, it was a little chaotic. One of the things I find interesting is there are a couple different games they play there. And every time I've been to one of them, the gamer in me, it is always a little more chaotic than it needs to be. Supposedly it's being scored, but no one really keeps the score. And not that it's important that it's scored, I understand that. But it's just, Like, there's a through line that the person who's running the MC doesn't always seem to know how the games work. Like, the MC should know how the games work. So, anyway. Okay, that was Friday. On Saturday, our first panel was The Journey to Your Broadway Debut. So, there was a podcast called Survival Jobs, who interview actors and talk about things they did before or during or after them making it on Broadway. And they got the cast of a show called English. So English is currently on Broadway. It's a Pulitzer Prize-winning play. And it's about, it takes place in Iran, I believe, in a classroom where they're learning English as a second language. They have to take a test. And there's a teacher and four students. So it's a five-person play. All five of the cast members were there. For all five, it was the first time they were on Broadway. And anyway, it was a really... It was one of my favorite panels of the whole weekend. I haven't even seen the play. I don't know the play. Like, it was fascinating to me, and I haven't even seen the play. Just to hear about sort of the nature of what the play meant to them and how the play came about. And, like, one of the stories, and I heard the story again and again, is it is hard to get a play to Broadway. And every story about how I got my play to Broadway is like, okay, a bunch of things went our way, and, you know, and like I said, this is a Pulitzer Prize-winning play, but it's a topic, there's not a lot of Iranian actors that you see on stage, that's why all of them was their first time on a Broadway stage, and a lot of them had some very good conversation. Like, one of the through lines was, is this the best thing I'm ever going to do? Like, I love this piece. It's amazing. It's so great to work on it. But will I find other things that have this sort of, you know, they talked a lot about it's hard for, you know, people of Middle descent on Broadway. Like, there's not a lot of parts. And a lot of the parts are very stereotypical and not something you're particularly proud of or don't have the depth that you would want. And this play had it in spades, right? These were all really three-dimensional, cool characters that, anyway, so it was... It was really neat and interesting, and it just reminded me one of my thing about one of the things I try to do in this podcast is I like to bring on guests, and one of the big reasons is A, I've made a lot of podcasts, and guests know things I don't know, so it's good material, but also I love you to hear firsthand from other people. Magic is not, it's not like I sit alone and make magic. It's a giant group endeavor. And so I love pulling as many people as possible just so you can get a sense of all the different people and all the different things they care about. I really have tried to do a bunch of different podcasts on lots of different kinds of things. Like, and so this really sort of hammered home to me that hearing other people and hearing their voices directly, not just telling stories about it, but hearing it in their own voice, how important that is. And so I will continue. Maybe I'll even do more interviews. I really like doing interviews, and I really like picking people, talking about things that you might not know about, and that maybe you've never even heard about or thought about, but somebody has to do it, and that's their job, and hearing about that seems really cool. Okay, the next panel was called The Next Stage, Playwriting Paths for Student Artists. And the idea of this panel was talking about how do you find new artists? Basically, they're all programs that work with children and allow children, and by children, I mean up to 19, I believe, there were different programs, people that ran different programs, and talking about, like, how do you find new voices? And one of the people there, what was his name? Where is it? One of them had just, Max Friedlich. He had just had a play on Broadway that Rachel had seen called Jobs. Job. It's a two-person play. And afterward, Rachel and I were talking with him, and, like, he was just telling the story of how his play got to Broadway. And it's like, he wrote this play, and he put it on. There was a contest at a local theater in New York, and, like, 10 plays got picked, and those plays got put on, and then they advanced through a process until one of them won. And the one that won got, like, a week's worth of plays on the main stage, and then there was enough buzz off that, and there was like some TikTok personality that really liked it and got it. It became hot on TikTok, and then the writer's strike was going on, so a bunch of actors managed to come see it, and there was some buzz. And then anyway, and then the smallest Broadway theater opened up, and they were looking for a play, and this was a cheap play to do because it was two people on one set. And anyway, sort of, and his play ended up becoming a Broadway play. And so this idea of just how you get there, how you do that. And it reminded me a lot. One of the questions I get all the time is people saying, I want to be a game designer. I want to make magic. I want to do what you do. How do I do that? And that is why I try, like, why I do Nuts and Bolts, why I run the great designer searches, like, why I try and find opportunities to help give people an opportunity that might not normally have an opportunity. Like, one of the things I'm very proud about the Great Designer Search is I have a lot of people working on magic still to this day that I don't know would have necessarily easily got through the door. I don't know. They're very talented. But one of the real challenges in anything is, and like I said, this is time and time again, all the stories I heard is there are a lot of talented actors and writers and, you know, but how do you become how do you get on Broadway? And that's a hard talent. It's a hard task. It's a hard journey. And anyway, just hearing about different people and how they did it was interesting. And so, I do want to make sure that I have content on the avenues in. I've done some of this. I think I should do more. But I thought that was really interesting. And I want to make sure that there are avenues for young people to, you know, we need fresh blood and we need new voices and we need new perspectives. And that's important. Next, put it in writing, a conversation with Broadway playwrights. So they talked to Charles Kirsch, David Lindsay, Abair, Doug Wright, and Jen Silverman, and David Henry Huang. Oh, Charles Kirsch was the MC. Anyway, they talked to four Broadway players who have been on Broadway, some of them many times, about what it's like to be a Broadway writer. And as someone who is a writer, and my background obviously is in writing fiction, it's very fascinating. And once again, one of the themes that went through this panel is that part of being creative is failing. What was his name? David Henry Huang. He told a story about how he had done the book for M. Butterfly, which is a very famous musical. And then he wrote a play sort of based on that experience, and it just utterly flopped. And it took him a while to sort of come to this conclusion. Sometimes when you have failures, it takes a little while to realize it. He realized that it was a good idea. It was a bad execution. And so he made a new play using the same sort of premise of the original play. And that ended up becoming a play called Yellowface that went on Broadway. And the real through line that was really interesting to me is the idea that, or another story they told, Kimberly Akimbo, I forget who wrote that. One of his writers wrote that. He had written it as a play, and one of the very first things he wrote it as a play, not as a musical. And he later came back and said, you know what? This has the bones for being an interesting musical. And so he wrote lyrics for it and got someone to do the music. And it won a Tony, for Best Musical. And so, anyway, it really sort of hammered home the idea of a lot of creation is making mistakes or trying something but not executing it right. And a lot of good design is analyzing what you've done and try to figure out, hey, okay, I did it wrong, but was there a germ of a good idea there? The kind of classic example in magic was we made Chroma, which I really, really liked, and it failed. People did not like Chroma. And then in Theros, we were like, you know what? Maybe we just did it wrong, and we brought it back as Devotion, and we changed a few things, and we cleaned it up, and gave it better flavor, and produced better cards, and did a bunch of things. But in the end, and Devotion became a huge mechanic. So like, I think my gut idea of the core idea of this is a good mechanic, and when it failed, it's like, okay, what? I didn't serve the mechanic well. What did I, the designer, need to do? Okay, sorry. Next up was Wait in the Wings. So this is a series online. It's a documentary series, and this Wait in the Wings. What they do is they talk about Broadway failures. I've heard them talk in previous years about like the Spider-Man musical. One year he talked about the biggest five flops in Broadway history. But anyway, this year he screened one of his shows called Star Kids' Riskiest Show, The Trail to Oregon. And it's talking about this group that put on this play online, and they did the Oregon Trail, based on the video game, the Oregon Trail, based on the actual Oregon Trail. And the thing that I was not ready for was, I thought this example of just the thing that went horribly wrong. And it turned out it was a big hit. Which was really interesting because, I thought he only did bombs. Like, I was not prepared for it to be a big hit. But it was really interesting talking about how that summer they had done two plays, the Star Kids. One was a parody of Star Wars called Annie, A&I, and one, sure, for Anakin, and one was this Oregon Trail to Oregon. And the one that you thought would have been the surefire success failed. And the one that sounded risky, they just believed would implode, was the success. And that was really telling and, I don't know, a very interesting thing to me of how you don't always quite know what will succeed and what won't succeed. And that you use a lot of evidence to try to look at what you've done before. But anyway, that spoke to my heart. Okay, then we went to a thing called Broadway Breakdown with Matt Koplick and guest Gray Henson. And so the audience, they let us choose between Oklahoma, Sweeney Todd, Mean Girls, and Les Miserables. Everybody put their votes in a bowl. They randomly picked one of them out. Les Miserables won. They spent an hour just talking about Les Miserables. And I will say, I was super impressed with Matt Koplick. He knew so much. I mean, his guests also knew a lot. But they just talked for an hour about Les Miserables and talked about all sorts of different things. And it was really interesting. Something that I might try on my podcast is the idea of what if I just pick a topic and, like, instead of planning out the whole topic, which I normally do, what if I just picked a topic that I thought was meaning to say, okay, and sort of do free thought. Anyway, it's exciting to me. Okay, then on Sunday, almost done here, coverage for the crew, Broadway Swings and Subs. So this was about people that worked on shows, not as the regular people that did the things, and we had someone who did sound and props and costumes and hair, but the people who subbed in when those people weren't there. Like I talked earlier about swings for actors, there's swings for every single role. If the prop guy has a conflict, well, someone's got to be the swing for the prop guy and do the props. So anyway, it was interesting talking to all these people that were trying to make it in Hollywood. And this is like their way in. Like they're starting as a sub or a swing, and that one day, as you know, you just be a swing long enough, you make the change one day, you're the prop guy and not just the swing. And it was really interesting hearing sort of the ways in. One thing maybe I thought maybe I'll do is a podcast where I talk about what were people doing before they were magic designers. That might be a fun podcast. Okay, and the final event I went to before I had to leave, my last of BroadwayCon, was BroadwayCon Feud, which was their version of Family Feud. They'd done it in the past, and each year they get slightly better. The problem they had in previous years was they would ask people, and people would just give wrong answers because they didn't know. Like, name a Sondheim musical. And one of the answers was Mary Poppins, except he never made Mary Poppins. So there's no way anyone would guess Mary Poppins. Like, it's one thing to guess actual Sondheim, but you're not going to guess things that aren't even Sondheim. Well, I think the audience might think Mary Poppins is a Sondheim. So this time they fixed that. Everything they asked, in fact, was in the category, though some were harder to guess than others. One team was professional Broadway actors. The other was fans. The actors won. And they asked all sorts of fun things. Name a Broadway musical song starting with O. Name a Tony-winning play. Name a theater. They did a bunch of things. The one thing I found really interesting is the MC, the host, who I thought was very, very funny. I liked her a lot. Did not understand how the game worked at all. Like, the audience was constantly just correcting her, like, no, do this, no, do that. And as somebody who just who's run game shows, like, how do you not know how the game show works? But anyway, it was super fun, though. It was very fun. And, okay, so anyway, I will sum up. I had a great time at Broadway. Rachel and I, it's fun hanging with my daughter, my eldest daughter. It's a love that we share. And it really, like I said, it's fun to be the fan. It's fun to not be the content creator, but the content absorber. And I learned a lot, and there's a lot of things that I really, like I said, the reason why I like doing this podcast is, A, it just shows you a different aspect of me, and maybe you'll learn a few things for those who don't know anything about Broadway. But it's really cool, and it's really an interesting insight into watching, like, learning how you can present stuff. And I took a lot of stuff I took away that I will experiment with, because there's things that I really liked from how people did things. So anyway, that was my trip to BroadwayCon 2025. So hope you guys enjoyed this, but I'm now at work. So we all know what that means. It means instead of talking magic and Broadway, it's time for me to make magic. I'll see you guys next time. Bye-bye.